Okay, so today is Tuesday, June 2nd, Yud Sivan. And we hopefully will finish Perek Kaf today. I can't guarantee it because we have this very interesting thing to go through. So we're going to begin with Rav Bazak in his article on this section included in this footnote. You see it's a footnote, it's not part of the article. A very nice summary of all the basic sources that will be good to have as we read through the Chashuki Chamed. So we're going to read through those quickly.
And are we starting with a particular Pasuk reference?
We're starting with the whole idea of how the people of Avel could have killed Sheva ben Bichri. And what the halacha behind that was, and whether they were right or they were wrong, and how the wise woman, who we learned was Sarach bat Asher, how she may have convinced them to go through it. Okay, any other questions?
Yeah, is this story the basis for a halacha for us?
Yeah, we're going to see the halacha that, the question that was asked to Rav, I think it's Zilberstein, that started his discussion on this. So it definitely can have relevance. It's the classic Philippa Foot philosophical question of, you know, the train tracks and one person would be killed versus 20 people or whatever the basic was. I wish more people gave her credit when they quoted it. Hi, Joel. No, long time no see.
Yeah, sorry. I've been busy with projects.
Good.
Doing things with my family and my extended family.
Nice. So. And you got a haircut, a quarantine haircut.
No. Are you kidding? I need one badly.
Okay.
What are we discussing?
So we are.
My hippie days.
We are discussing the killing of Sheva ben Bichri and how the wise woman who we have discussed previously was Sarach bat Asher, who lived from coming into Egypt to leaving Egypt to this episode, convinced the people of the town not only to kill him and to hand him over to Yoav. So this is Rav Bazak's footnote on this section with a halachic background, and then we're going to read the Chashukei Chemet. So we're still in chapter 20, which we may have started when you left us, Joel.
Yeah, what parak and pasuk are we on, please?
So it's parak chaf, and the psukim are. Sorry, I have it marked off. Yud tet, pasuk yud tet, I think is around where it starts. No, kaf. Sorry, that's wrong. It doesn't say the psukim. Does anybody have it open that knows the psukim of the wise woman? Just skim through 20. You'll find it. It's there. Oh, I can tell you that first.
16.
Yeah, 16 it starts. Okay. So Sheva ben Bichri led a rebellion against David. And he went into a walled city that Yoav was about to destroy the walled city when the wise women offered a deal and agreed to kill Sheva ben Bichri and hand him over to Yoav. So what was the halakha? So today we're going over the halachic background of that. Okay, this episode served as an important source for a most important halachic discussion. Is it permissible to kill one person in order to save the lives of a group of people? So he's going to review the main sources. It was taught in Tosefta Trumot. So Tosefta is a collection of sources from the time of the Mishnah. It's an academic debate whether it preceded or came after the Mishnah. And it's the only extant, full book of texts from that time. And you can find it in the back of your Gemara, the Tosefta. And if it's quoted in the Gemara, it'll be referred to as a Braita. And there are lots of other breitot that we don't find in the Tosefta, but it is the largest collection that we have of these contemporaneous sources to the Mishnah. Okay, so this is Tosefta of Trumot. If Gentiles said to a group of people, hand over to us one of you, and we will kill him, or else we will kill all of you, they should allow themselves to be killed rather than hand over a single soul of Israel. But if they specified a particular person for them, the way they specified Sheva ben Bichri, so you see here that the Tosfot is based in this, in our story, they should hand him over and not all be killed. Rabbi Yehuda said, and these are the two opinions here, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, that are going to be repeated. When do these words apply? When he is inside and they are outside. But when he is inside and they are inside, since he will be killed and they will be killed, they should hand him over and not all be killed. And so it says, then the woman went to all the people in her wisdom. She said to them, since he will be killed and we will be killed, hand him over to them and be not all killed. So that is one opinion that justifies the handing over of Sheva ben Bichri, that they would have for sure all been killed, and he would have been killed, so therefore it was halakhically permissible. It's really interesting that in our situation, it's all Jews, and none of the sources really seem to differentiate, even though the Tosefta says, if Gentiles said to a group of people, when they bring in our source of Sheva ben Bichri, they don't count that it was Jews versus Jews, which is, I don't know, it's just interesting. Okay, she said to them, okay, Rabbi Shimon says, so she said to them, whoever rebels against the kingdom of the house of David is liable for the death penalty. So you see the difference between these two opinions. Rabbi Yehuda says, the reason why you can give him over is because it's guaranteed everyone's going to be killed if you don't, and it's a guarantee. Rabbi Shimon says, he's already a dead man walking. He's rebelled against the house of David. He's liable for the death penalty. That's what allows you to hand him over. The relationship between the three viewpoints in the Braita is not clear. Rashi, in his commentary to our chapter, cites the last two opinions, and this is the way he explains the viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda. If he could save himself, if he was inside and they were outside, and you are in danger and he can escape, we do not set aside a life for another life and kill one person in order to save others. But now that he too will be killed with you, since the walls have been destroyed and there is no way to escape, it is better that he alone should die and that others should not die along with him. According to this approach, when they are all in equal danger inside, it is better that one person should be put to death rather than they all die. But if the wanted person is in less danger than the others and there is a chance that he will be saved, we do not sacrifice the life of his individual even to save a community. However, from the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, it would appear that we cannot learn from the story of Sheva ben Bichri that we are permitted to kill an individual in order to save the community, as Sheva ben Bichri was, in any case, liable to the death penalty as a rebel against the king. The Amoraim and the Yerushalmi also disagree regarding whether the Tosefta's allowance is connected to Sheva ben Bichri's status as a rebel, or whether it can be applied generally. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish said, this is when he is liable for the death penalty, like Sheva ben Bichri. Rabbi Yochanan said, even though he is not liable for the death penalty, like Sheva ben Bichri. Okay, so this brings us to the Philippa Foot case of the two tracks. And you have one person on one track that the train that is going to be safe the way the train tracks are going, and you have five people that are going to be killed if the train track keeps going. So it seems that according to Rabbi Yochanan here, you can switch the train track because it's one person versus five people. According to Reish Lakish, you could only switch the train track if you knew that this person was a capital offense criminal. Okay, so you see the difference in how you would decide that. The Rambam rules in accordance with the view that the allowance applies only in the case where the person is otherwise liable for the death penalty. However, if the Gentiles single out a specific individual and say, give us so-and-so or we will kill all of you, different rules apply. If the person is liable to the death penalty like Sheva ben Bichri, they may give him over to them. Initially, however, this instruction is not conveyed to them. If he is not liable to the death penalty, they should allow themselves all to be killed rather than give over a single soul to the Gentiles. The Haggadot Maimoniot, so he's a commentary on the Rambam, rules in accordance with Reish Lakish rather than Rabbi Yochanan, whose viewpoint is generally accepted as law. And then I didn't get into all of these other things. I'm just going to read to you from the Chashukei Chamed. So if you are interested, you can go to the Mishnah Torah and read all of those. The Kesef Mishnah is Rav Yosef Kaira and his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so now, Chashukei Chamed. So if you remember, we haven't done him in a long time. He is, I think it's Rav Zilberstein. I'm sorry, I didn't look it up. And he has these two different types of books. He has Vahar Revna, which is a book, you can actually get it in English. It's a nice Shabbos table discussion book. And he takes different shilas and tshuvas that he himself has addressed and orders them in their relevance to the weekly parsha. So it's a very nice book. One of my Ravim insists that he made them up. He made a lot of them up so that he'd have material. And the Chashukei Chamed is taking the same idea, but organizing it according to sugyas in the Gemara. Apparently, the Bar Ilan CD, where I get most of my material, in its latest updated form, which I have not gotten, includes more volumes of the Chashukei Chamed on different sugyas than what I currently have. Okay, so this is a very interesting question. L'hapil matos im Yehudim, kedei shelo yafsitz Yehudim b'shgaga. So can you shoot down a plane that has a Jew or Jews in it in order that that plane won't accidentally blow up other Jews? So here's the question. B'mechama, in the war, ira shematus Yehudi, so a Jewish warplane, hechel lehavtzitz b'ta'ut plugat Yehudiot. He's accidentally, by mistake, blowing up, what's a pluga in the army? It's a group of soldiers. Anyway, so a group of soldiers, I'm sure there's an English translation.
Platoon.
What?
A platoon, maybe.
Yeah, a platoon or a battalion, one of those words. I think it goes machlaka, which is like around 25, 30 soldiers, and then pluga, which is three groups of those 25, 30. I think that's how it works. So, bli shetia efsharut ledaveach letayas al ta'ota. So he's starting to drop bombs on a Jewish army group, and there is absolutely no way to talk to the pilot about his mistake. There's no way to reach him and stop him. Hidora ha-she'ela ha'im mutar la-hapil at ha-matos. Can we shoot down that plane? Ha-mafsit et achav ha-yudim, that is blowing up his Jewish brethren. Machmat ta'ut mifkado, because of the mistake of his command. Kedin Rodef, is he like a Rodef, one who's chasing after his friend, Rodef achar chavero, lehargo, in order to kill him? Shena marbo, as it's written, haba lehargecha hashkem lehargo. We have the pasuk in the Torah, the one who's coming to kill you, you can wake up early and kill him first. Okay, so now, what I put, it's very long tshuva, so I put in small, which essentially covers what Rav Bazak covered for us. And it also, the couple of things that I wanted to highlight from this, but we're not going to read the whole thing, is right here. So the Bavli and Sanhedrin said, this is talking about a woman giving birth, and the birth of the baby is probably going to kill her. It's a very difficult birth. So the question is, can you kill the fetus? So the answer most commonly understood is that as long as the baby's head has not come out, or if it's a breech birth, as long as the majority of the body hasn't come out, then the baby could be seen as a rodef and you can kill the baby. It says the midwife should go in. It's what they call in modern parlance a partial birth abortion, I think, where they take out limb by limb. But once the head comes out, it becomes a different story, because before the head comes out, it's not considered a nefesh, a soul. But once the head comes out, it's considered a nefesh. Okay? So that's the Mishnah. And the Gemara has two different explanations. So the Bavli in Sanhedrin says, Dishmaya kara tfula. It's all from heaven. And what does that mean? It's two things. One is, what's the intent of the person chasing? Okay, so in the case of this baby, the intent is absolutely not to kill the mother, right? And The baby's not doing anything wrong. The baby is following the natural order of the world of how babies are born. And so once the head is out, it's the natural order and you can't kill him, the baby, and it's and we're kind of stuck in that situation, okay? So that is Mashmaya Karad Fula. The Yerushalmi gives another explanation. Ein ata yoda mi horeget mi. You don't know who's killing who. In the case of the mother and the baby, you could say that the mother's narrow birth canal is what's killing the baby, just as much as the baby trying to get out is what's killing the mother. Okay? So you can imagine that those have different halachic repercussions depending on what type of argument you're going to make. Okay? And then just one more thing in the small print, quoting the Rambam. So the Rambam explains the words of the Gemara, Mishmaya Karad Fule, that it's this heavenly thing. Shahakavanahi Shahubar Hamasakenatimo Osezot Mikoch Tivo Osha Olam. So the fetus that is endangering the mother's life does this from the natural order of the world. Velo mitoch yazma atzmit. And it's nothing to do with its own ability. It is not actively trying to kill the mother. It is just doing what it's meant to do in the natural course of the world. Velachein ein lahargo. And therefore, that's why you can't kill the fetus once the head is out. Masha ein kein, which is not the same as a katan harodef achar chaviro lahargo. Even a minor, which in the Gemara says we don't differentiate between a minor or a mature adult if somebody's trying to kill you. So in the case of the minor also, even though he doesn't have full control of his decision making, you're still allowed to kill him. Because this pursuing of this minor chasing his friend to kill him is not the natural course of the world. And therefore, even though he's not a bar dot, somebody in full control of his mental faculties, you can kill him in order to save the one who's chasing him. And then the Rav goes into, what about a minor who's just playing with a gun and he's pointing it towards his friend and he doesn't know that his actions are going to kill his friend? In that case, also, it's permitted to kill him. Okay, so let's go now to the big print. So this is where, so the Tiferet Yisrael, which is a commentary on the Mishnah. Ulam Yuan v'Tiferet Yisrael, we've looked at him before. And this is in Ohalot. I didn't look at the full context of Ohalot, but one of the contexts in Ohalot is if you are giving birth to a baby and the woman will become tame because of the birth. So at what point in the opening of the uterus is that space then, Ohel, then considered tame? Like at what point in the opening, and if it's a, God forbid, a stillborn, then at what point does the stillborn inside of the mother be considered outside of the mother, that the opening of the mother's uterus is big enough, cervix is big enough that it would impurify that space. Okay, so he explains, Mishmaya Karad Fula. This is the natural course of events. It's decreed from heaven. Shehu Ubar lo mitzkaven laharoget emo. The fetus is not intending to kill the mother. Ve'ein bo kol ashman. There's no guilt here. Ela mehashamayim savavu eta devarim. It rather all comes from heaven. She'imo tistaken machmat haleda, that the mother is endangered because of the birth. Ma she'enkin katan harodef achar chaviro, which is not the case with the minor who's chasing his friend. Afal pi she'eno bar onshim, even though he can't be punished according to the courts because he's too young, mitzkavin hu laharoget chavira v'rotzeachu. He's still intending to kill his friend, and he's a murderer. V'lachin shem rodef alav, and therefore he is called a rodef, and you can kill him. So Rav Zilberstein says, in the words of the Tiferet Yisrael, he's not describing a minor that doesn't know what he's doing, who's playing with a gun and doesn't know that by pushing on the lever, it's going to kill his friend. Ein dino kevrod rodef v'asur lehargo. And therefore, he would not be a rodef, and it would be forbidden to kill him. Okay, so here we have this question of intent. And is that a necessary factor in declaring a rodef? Okay, so you can kind of see how this is going to relate to our case of Sheva ben Bichri. Is Sheva ben Bichri's intent to get the whole town killed? No, he's just trying to save his own life, right? And it's going to say that explicitly soon, but just so you see how it's fitting in. Le'orzot tayase she'in bo kol ashma dino ke'ubar. And you might think in that case, for our original question, the pilot has no guilt whatsoever, and he's just like a fetus. V'nechshav ha'davar she'mehashamayim sivavo etaredifa v'esor la'ago. And you would think this is just preordained from heaven, and therefore it's forbidden to kill him. V'harigat yachid lahatzalat rabin asura. And we never would just kill one person in order to save many. That's asur, as it's explained in the words of the Me'iri in the Sanhedrin. Asur lo lahatzal etzmo b'nefesh chavirav. He can't save himself with the soul of his friend. Afilu rabim b'nefesh achid, even many with one soul. V'hushem amru b'shmini shel trumot. And that's in the eighth parak of Trumot, which we saw before. We saw in Rav Bazak. V'kach hem divrei hatiferet Yisrael. And this is also the words of the Tiferet Yisrael, B'Shmuel. Okay, and now this is just a summary of all the psukim that we read. So since it's very long, I'm going to skip that summary, and it leads us up to when the wise woman gave Yoav the head of Sheva ben Bichri, meaning they took care of actually killing him. They didn't even give him to Yoav alive. They killed him and they gave Yoav the head. And they sent it over the wall to Yoav. And he blew the shofar and everyone went back to their tents. The instruction was over. Okay. Maksha Tiferet Yisrael. So the Tiferet Yisrael raises a difficulty. He never intended that the people of Avel would be killed because of him. He only intended to save himself. So how could the people of the town have killed him? So he explains that since his saving himself would necessarily lead to causing their death, therefore he can be called a rodef. Even though he wasn't trying to kill them per se, his presence in the town was enough to get them killed. Im kein gam ha'ubar yechashav l'rodef. And if you understand it this way, then also the fetus is considered a rodef. Sharei hu gorem l'mitata'im, because he's causing the death of the mother. So how can we say this? B'tiretz ha'tiferet Yisrael. So he explains. Sheva ben Bichri, afal pi shelo hitkaven lerdof. Even though he didn't intend to chase after them and kill them. Al kol panim. Oh, that's funny. Kill and kiss. It's very similar to neshek and neshech, like in Hebrew too. And I just made that Freudian slip. Okay. Al kol panim hu garam miritzono l'sakana. So even though it wasn't his desire to kill them, he still, of his own desire, put them in danger. It wasn't like the fetus who was just following the natural law of the world. Sheva ben Bichri, through his own will, put himself in this town, which caused them major danger. Lefichach anu danim oto kerodef b'mitkaven. Therefore, we judge him like an intentional chaser, not like the fetus. Ve'od shehagrama leherigat anshe avel shelo kedin asa. And since he would have caused the killing of the people of Avel, he also was working outside of the law. Okay, so we have both intent and outside of the law. V'domeh l'mezayef matba'ot. And it's similar to a case of somebody who is forging coins, a counterfeiter. U'mesaken et achav ha'yudim. And he's endangering the lives of his fellow Jews. Shemutar l'masro l'nochrim. In that case, you can actually hand that forger over to the non-Jewish police forces. And this is in the Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat. Masha'en kein havlad, Lo garan li moata sakana bekavana. It's not the case for the fetus that had no intent of causing the mother danger. Vegam lo asa shum devar shelo kedin, and also wasn't committing any crimes. Sharei kacha teva sheubar yotze mirachem imo, lechein lo danim oto kerodef. And that's why we can't judge the fetus once the head is out like a rodef, because he's not doing anything wrong in terms of coming out of his mother's womb. Any questions? Okay. Lefi havanata tiferet Yisrael, according to the understanding of tiferet Yisrael, lo hutar damo shel harodef ki im leachar shenitmalu shnei tnaim. So he is making it so that you need both conditions met. The first condition, kasher harodef garam lesakana mitoch ratzon, that he's intentionally causing danger. And the second condition, kishenahag shelo kedin, when he's behaving contrary to the law. Ulefize katan harodef mutar lahargo davka kasher mitkavein laharoget chaviro. And therefore, a minor who's chasing his friend, you can only kill him if he intends on hurting his friend, killing his friend. Aval katan hayorech hitzim, but a minor who's just shooting arrows into random places, ve'eno yodea klal ma'osa, and he doesn't know what he's doing, ein dino kirodef. His din is not like a rodef. Vishitato ein laharoget tayas. So according to the Tiferet Yisrael, you would not be able to kill this pilot. Mishum shehatayas lo garam lesakana mitoch ratzon, because he didn't have any intent to cause danger. Ela hatayas nahag kehalacha. Rather, this pilot was actually behaving according to the halacha. Bishum ashma lo mutalet alav. He has no guilt on him whatsoever. Velo hayalo lechshosh shemifkado ta'a. And he doesn't have any sense that his command was mistaken. So that's the Tiferet Yisrael. We could not kill him. Ulam l'shitat ha-me'iri b'shem chokhma dirot l'shelefanav. But the Me'iri, who's quoting the wise men in the generation before him, mutar le'im atzma l'harogat ubar. The mother herself can kill the fetus. Uma shekatav yatzar rosho enog imbo. And when it says, once his head comes out, you can't touch him, hakavana l'acharim. That the intent is for other people. The mother, because it's her life that's in danger, can kill the fetus coming out. So in this case, if the soldiers understand what's going on, the soldiers could take it into their own hand to bring down the pilot's plane. But it couldn't be some, you know, computer guy in a room that has access to a missile to allow, who's not in imminent danger himself, to bring down the plane. Okay, so those are, that's an interesting little loophole. Okay, umna midivrei harama, but the rama in choshen mishpat. So we quoted before the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch, you guys probably all know this, is Rav Yosef Kairo. Who actually lived in Sfat. He was a Sfardi halachicist and also a Mekubal. And he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. The Rama, who was in Poland, Rav Moshe Isserlis, was working on his own halachic treatise at the time. And there were lots of different ways to organize halachot in that time. The Shulchan Aruch followed the way the Tur, who was the son of the Rosh, also an Ashkenazi, the way that he moved to Spain. It's a very interesting story. The Rosh was in France and moved to Spain. And his son wrote the Tur and organized the halachot in this way that the Shulchan Aruch then adapted. The Rama, rather than publishing his own independent book, he wrote a gloss on the Shulchan Aruch. So if you open up a Shulchan Aruch, you'll see Rabbi Yosef Kairo in regular print, and you'll see the Rama in Rashi script. And so the Shulchan Aruch became the halachic book for both Sfardim and Ashkenazim in the 16th century. Okay, so this is again Choshen Mishpat. Shekatav shamizayef ziofim yesh lo din rodef. So the one who's forging coins, who's a forger, he has the din of rodef. Mashma delos svirale kashitata tiferet Yisrael. And therefore, he doesn't hold the same way as the Tiferet Yisrael. Ubebiur hagra, and according to this is Rabbi Akiva Eger, or is it no the Vilna Gaon? It might be I'm embarrassed. Okay, I'm not going to say who this. Hevi mikorot lechach shegam kisheino mitzkavin. Okay, so the Tiferet Yisrael had both kavanah and breaking the law. So the Ramah, by saying that the forger is a rodef, is saying even if he doesn't intend to get other people killed, he doesn't have the intention. So that's what he's commenting on. Shegam kisheino mitzkavin, even if you don't have the intention. Because of Shem Rodef Alav. In any case, the name that he's called a Rodef. Mehad de Baba Kama Daf Kuf Yud Zayin and Mudbet. Demi Shehala et Achamor Lesrina. Somebody who brings a donkey onto a boat. Veachamor Halach Latbia Tetsrina. And the presence of that donkey is going to sink the boat. Nechshav Le Rodef Hagam Shalonit Kavein Lesakein et Anosim. It's considered a Rodef even if it doesn't intend to endanger the travelers. Begame Gemara b'Sanhedrin, and also in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, de itzterich tama de mishmaya radfo, below masvik tam she'eno mitkaven lirdof. So it's not. You need also a. Okay, I'm going to skip that. Sorry, it's not shayach to us. So let's go here. Veshamati memorachemi maran hagrish el yashiv. So this was. The Chashukei Chemed's father-in-law was Rav Eliashiv Shlita. He was still alive at the time that he wrote this. Shafilu, now we would say Zal, sorry. Shafilu im lo nekabel et divrei ha-Tiferet Yisrael. Even if you don't accept the words of the Tiferet Yisrael, Eile nefereish et ha-sugya k'pshuta, and you just explain the Gemara in its simple way. So remember, the Tiferet Yisrael, you needed both conditions, that he had intent and that he was doing something wrong. Shekatan ha-rodef achar chavero nechshav k'rodef. The miner who's chasing after his friend is considered a rodef. Mishum shekol hamesaviv mita lechaviro hutar damor. Anybody who is going to cause the death of his friend, his blood is on him. Zulat im dochfim otom yashamayim, except for when he's being pushed from the heavens to do it. Because of yitachin she'en l'harog et tetayas. And so therefore, in any case, we might not be permitted to kill the pilot. Mishum she'iyaf shali krolo rodef. It's impossible to call him a rodef. B'sha'a shehu ba lehatzil et otam hayodim shelemase horeg. Because not only... So if you're... Okay, spell it out. We're trying to get around this kavana, this intent, and just said he's about to kill somebody. Can you still kill him as a rodef? So we've seen that a miner doesn't have intent, and yet, or he's not a bar dat, but if he intends to kill somebody, we can kill him. In the case of the pilot, it's a double negative intent. Why? Because at the time that he thinks he's actually saving the Jews by doing what he's doing. Ve'af misaken et chayav lemanam, and he, the pilot, is endangering his life for the Jews in what he's doing. Behosif od shafilu im hamatzil eno misakenet chayav ulam mataratel lahatzil. Even if the one who's saving isn't risking his own life, but his goal is to save, gam az yitachen she'asur lahargo. Then it's also possible that you can't kill him. And it gives an incident that was in the time of the Chatam Sofer, that there was a maidservant that her mistress fainted, and she quickly went to go pour water into her mouth to save her soul. But because of all the confusion, she made a mistake and she poured oil, gas, neft. Okay? And so you could, if somebody's watching this woman run with neft, gas, to go supposedly save her mistress, could he kill her in the process, if there was no other way from stopping her from putting neft down her throat? And it could be that it's forbidden to kill her. And so we can't call them a rodef because they're trying to save the lives. Okay, we're going to skip this very sad episode in the name of time. It's about a baby in a bunker making noise. And can you kill him? So it's going to mention it a little bit, but it's not really relevant to our text. Happy to learn it with anybody if you want to later.
You're not going to tell us the answer?
He doesn't give an answer there. Not everyone would agree. Some people would say the father could, because it's similar to the mother killing, like the Meiri explained with the fetus, and some people don't accept that. Okay, so now back to our story in Shmuel. Tihine ka'amor benavi, so Shmuel, lo hayu mochanim v'tchila anshe aval lichorot et roshal Sheva ben Bichri. So if you look at the psukim of our story, it doesn't appear that the people of the town of Avel were so quick to hand over the head, to cut off the head of Sheva ben Bichri. We were praising Sarach Bat Asher, the wise woman, for her ability to convince them that it was necessary, so they had to be convinced. On the contrary, they were actually prepared to be killed and not give him up to Yoav. And this is because the halacha is, so they're walking on the way and they came and ran into a non-Jew who said, give us one of you and we'll kill him. And if you don't give us, we'll kill all of you. Yehargu v'lo yimsaru lahem nefesh echad miYisrael. They all then have the responsibility to be killed and not give up one soul of Israel. And this is also in Trumot that we've mentioned before. Imkein nish'alta she'ela be'elu dvrim hitzlicha ha'isha ha'chokma l'shachnea et anshe aval she'inhagu yimshava ben Bichri acheret mehanifsak b'halacha. So how could she have convinced him to behave in a way that was contrary to the decided halacha? And again, he's not differentiating between Jews asking for the Jew versus non-Jews asking to the Jew, so I don't have an answer for that. Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Shimon. So this is what we read in Rav Bazak, this argument between Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Huda sover she'amra lahem. Rabbi Huda reasons that this is what she said to them. Ben kach yehargu kulam v'gam sheva ben Bichri imahem. So according to Rabbi Huda, she argued, we're all going to be killed. Sheva ben Bichri is going to die either way. Either he's going to die alone, or he's going to die with all of us. And that's why they were willing to give Sheva ben Bichri to Yoav and save them all. Shema shenamar siya shel b'nei nochrim t'nu yergu, sorry. Hu rak hishalo barur she'oto adam she'anochim mevakshim yehareg behachrachim kulam. So the case that was told before about how you're not allowed to give up a Jew to a non-Jew to be killed was only when the one to be killed wasn't specified. In our case, Sheva ben Bichri was specified. Because ele yitzchachen she'yitzchabe o yivrach v'yinatzal. And also if the person who was wanted to be killed could escape somehow, you're also forbidden. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shadivre Ha'isha Chokma Hayu. Rabbi Shimon says, no, this is what it was. Kol ha-mored b'malchut Beit David chayav mita. Anybody who rebels against the kingdom of David is obligated to die. V'lchein ma'achar v'hu chayav mita, ein anshe ava chayavim le'ha-hareg b'golo. And since he was already, his status was already to die, therefore, the people of Avel have no obligation to die because of him, because he's already considered dead. Okay, and you can Vivian Tosafot, sorry, Shirak im Hasanhedrin Pasku Shehu Mored. So Tosafot in Megillah explains this is only possible if you have a full court, a Beit Din, a Sanhedrin, who's willing to give a psak that he is a rebeller and that he's obligated to die. So he's saying it's possible that this wise woman actually sat down a court, a Sanhedrin, who made the psak that he was rebelling against the kingdom. And so she did everything very halachically. So sorry, I don't know who he is, the Chastei David, but he gives a novel idea on the Tosafta, she'ein kol machloket bin Rabbi Yehuda l'Rabbi Shimon, that they're actually not having a disagreement. It's not either everyone would have to die, we know he's going to die, and rather than all of us dying and him dying, just him, or he's considered already dead, he's a rebel, so we don't have to die for him. So they're not arguing. Rather, Rabbi Yehuda nizkak gam ledivrei Rav Shimon. Rabbi Shimon, they actually go together. V'rayatohi she'ilu lo haya sham ele ta'amo shel Rabbi Yehuda. If we only had the reason of Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda was that it was, they knew exactly who had to die and they shouldn't all die with him. Hatenach she'u rasha'in l'mastro chai b'yad yov. Because if it were just Rabbi Yehuda, then they would have given him willingly alive to Yoav. Ukumosha b'kesh lehem. And that's what Yoav asked. Chenu oto levado. Just give us him. Ulam minayin lehem lasot isur nosaf lichrot et rosho. How did they ever get it into their heads, the people of Avel, to kill him and only give Yoav the head? Why wouldn't they have just transferred him alive? Im hotai lehem liyot garma lemitato, lo hotai lehem largo b'yadayim. Even if they were permitted to be the cause of his death by handing him over to Yoav, knowing he would die, that doesn't make it permissible for them to actually kill him. Shnei averot ne'amru b'isor shfichut damim. These two prohibitions are said in the laws of murder. Aleph, shenefesh mi'Yisrael lo te'areg. Don't kill a Jewish soul. Bet, shadam mi'Yisrael lo yerotzeach. That a man from Israel should not be a murderer. Klomar, Aleph, asur la'abed dam naki ve'afilo ayidei garma. You can't lose clean blood, even if you're just causing it. You're not actually doing it. V'lachin, asur limsor yodi l'nochri. And therefore, you can't give over a Jew to a non-Jew, shehei argenu. That would kill him. Afal pi she'amosro eno ki'im garma. Even though the person who's transferring is only a cause, he's not actually killing him. V'chayivim kulam lehareg kedei sheyudi lo yehareg. And therefore, they're obligated all to be killed rather than have a Jew killed. Isur ze lo ne'amor kasher ben kach yehargu kulam. Ishim she'az mesirato lenochri lo goremet ledam naki she'ishpoch. Sherei dam ze ben kach ishpach. This is not the case in our case of Sheva ben Bichri, where he would die anyway. Bet etzem maaseh ha'hariga hu davar she'ein kol heter lasot to. So the very essence of this killing is something that's not permissible to do. V'zo avera chamura she'asra Torah she'yudi lo yaratech. This is an even greater sin that the Torah forbade a Jew from being a murderer. V'aleha ne'amar yehareg ve'al yavor. And on this it's written, you should be killed and not sin. Avera zo hi afilu ka'asher ben kach yehargo kulam. And this sin is even if you were going to be killed anyway. Kumo she'asur legalot erva o la'avod avodazara lamrot she'yehareg. And it's the same thing for inappropriate sexual relationships or idolatry. You can't do them even if you're going to get killed as a result. V'lechein sover hachasti David shelo yitachin shekartu et rosh mitamo shel Rabbi Yehuda. And that's why the Chassid David says is no way that they just took one of these opinions of Rabbi Yehuda, that they would all have died anyway. Mishum shemachmatze lohutar maaseh ritzicha, because then they never would have been permitted to actually kill him themselves. They would have handed him over alive. Ukidivrei Chassid David mevuar b'meiri. Sorry, and like the words of the Chassid David, we see in the Meiri. V'zelashano. And I'm just going to explain. Mifurash b'divrei ha-me'iri, she'afila b'mikra she'im lo yehargenu yehargu kulam. Even in the incident that if they don't kill him, everyone will be killed. Mutar rak l'mastro l'nochrim, ein lo lehargo b'yadayim. They are only permitted to give him over to the non-Jews. They can't kill him themselves. Lefi divrei ha-chaste David, lo hayta rashut le'av b'bonker leharog et ha-tinok. So according to the words of the Chassid David, the father in the bunker was not allowed to kill his baby. But as I said, there were other people who said he could have. Ve'afilu im hayu kulam ne'argim, even if they all would have been killed. Mishum she'la'arog b'yadayim asur, because killing with your own hands is asur, forbidden. Mishum she'asur liyudi liyot ratzeach, because it's forbidden for a Jew to become a murderer. Ve'ulai ledat ha'chazonish, but maybe according to the opinion of the Chazonish, Hasover shepeula shehi beikara peula tatzala, who he's the one that reasoned that if your intent is to save, so this action was mainly an action of saving by killing the baby or whatever it is, you would actually be saving everyone else. Kegon hatayat chetz mitzad harabim letzad hayachid, like directing an arrow away from a lot of people to a single person. Tzricha liot mutert. Then it would be permissible. Ulei gam hanachat hakar al piv shel tinok nechshevet b'ikara k'pula hatzala v'hashtakat hakol. And maybe putting the pillow on the baby's face is an act of saving in terms of quieting his voice. Ulam ledat ha-tiferet Yisrael v'ha-gra sham v'mishnayot. So according to Tiferet Yisrael and also the gra there in the Mishnah, efshar demutar, it's possible that it is permissible. Gam ledat ha-tiferet Yisrael yesh lish'ol madu hargu et Sheva ben Bichri. And according to the opinion of Tiferet Yisrael, we have to ask also why they themselves killed Sheva ben Bichri v'lo histavku b'mesirato liyoav, and they weren't just satisfied in handing him over alive to Yoav. V'yesh letaretz k'divrei ha-metzudat David. So we can explain, like according to the Metzudat David, who I don't believe I brought down when we learned it inside, she'chasheshu shama yalshin al anshei avel v'yimsaram liyoav v'yasaken et chayim, that maybe the people of Avel were afraid that Sheva ben Bichri would actually say Lashon Hara about the people of Avel to Yoav, and he would, in that case, get all the people of Avel killed if they gave him to Yoav alive. And the one who says Lashon Hara, Hamal Shinin, dino kerodaf, his deen is like that of a rodaf, umutar lehago, and you can kill him. Okay, so we have a few reasons why they were allowed to kill him that were all discussed here. Either he was a dead man anyway, and he was endangering their lives, or because he was going to gossip about them and make their lives in danger, so therefore he was like a rodef. He was a double rodef. He was a rodef while he was alive, while he was in their town, and he was a rodef even when he would give him up to Yoav after that. So therefore they had to kill him in order to save their own lives.
So Stacy, are you saying that they were allowed to hand him over, according to one opinion, alive? I mean, they were allowed to kill him with their own hand because he might have gossiped. That's the one opinion.
Exactly. She'amal shino dinin kerodef. And that's in the Metzudat David.
The other part also about, because I was going to ask that before he actually brought it down, that he wasn't proven to be a moreed, you know, I mean, it seems a little far-fetched that she, you know, that the wise woman convened, you know, the Sanhedrin, because it was an emergent situation, so it's hard to imagine, you know, that actually happened. So that, to me, is problematic as well, because he, you know, if you take that as being the other opinion, that he was a moreed, but he would have to have been proven to be a moreed. So, I think, to me, it still stands as a bit problematic. And also the issue that you said that they don't address, that it was Jews handing him to Jews, you know, rather than, we're talking about non-Jews here, and they don't make that distinction, but it is, I mean, it seems to be relevant, possibly.
Yeah, you would think that if it's Jews, especially on the order, the presumed order of the king, that a lot of these, that the townspeople would be able to hand him over. And a lot of these laws wouldn't apply because it's on order of the king. So I don't know.
Oh, so you're saying it actually would be more lenient, not the other. I was actually thinking the other way, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't think we came to any conclusion on the actual pilot, the original question, whether it's allowed to kill him. So yeah.
Also, than Jews. So that's in that they did take it to. Both groups were Jews, if I recall.
Yeah, it's a Jewish pilot accidentally bombing a Jewish battalion. So yeah, there's a lot of questions left here. The only thing that we know is what happened in our story, that not only did they hand him over, but they just handed his head over, that they themselves killed him. So it's sort of like a backwards explanation to figure out how they could have been justified, A, in handing him over, and B, in handing him over dead. And how the people of Avel, and how the wise woman could have convinced them to do this. What were her legal halachic arguments that made them able to do this? It's just a fascinating discussion, both in terms of our story and in the practical applications of it in wartime, in terms of abortion, in terms of all these types of cases that are going on. You could, you know, people might even like to, I'm not getting political, I'm not saying if it's right or wrong, but in terms of what we're going through now, is the economic shutdown sort of like a rodef to the people who might lose their livelihoods or, you know, commit suicide, God forbid, because of the situation, whatever it is, versus the COVID virus. So halakhically, it might be that the COVID virus is more of an imminent rodef, and we have to do whatever we can to save people. But the consequences of that, I think, also fits in maybe with this very amorphous question. If I don't know if anybody has any opinions on that. And then if something like the COVID-19 is going to cause, you know, riots, not that it's causing it, but kind of contribute to the severity of the riots that are happening, that's also, I don't know, these are all like really interesting ethical questions that I am not prepared to give answers to. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so I think for the sake of time, we'll finish. It's very short, so we'll be able to finish this very easily as we start Perek Kaf Aleph. I'm going to stop the recording.